providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to focus a lot more now on, let's say, more the junior resource space when it comes down to the stocks, as we are chatting with Tavi Costa, portfolio manager at Crescat Capital. Now, Tavi, something that we've been talking about throughout this month, even last month, is how the precious metals are in more of an uptrend. It seems like everything's in at least this 3 to 4 month uptrend, but some of the stocks, especially the juniors, have started to see a little more action. We've seen random volume spikes here and there, and I've noticed pretty much all the juniors starting to move higher. Now, they're moving higher off of some pretty depressed levels, especially if you're holding those stocks 1, 2 years ago. But look, there's a bit of an uptrend here. We don't know how long this uptrend's going to last. We don't know if this is the start of a whole new bull market that could last multiple years, or if this is just a short-term bounce. But Tavi, first and foremost, your thought on this uptrend in the precious metals that has now finally filtered down to a lot of the juniors and explorers.
Well, look, I think it's important to try to understand if this is a real trend or not. And in my opinion, it certainly is. I mean, it started back, you know, just go back some months ago, back in September. So we started seeing the yield curve inversion problem in the U.S. begin to really surge. We got as high as 91% of all possible spreads in the Treasury curve are all inverted. And a research of, you know, looking back prior decades where we've had similar imbalances in the credit market shows that it's time to be owning gold and selling stocks. And that means selling S&P 500 specifically as part of the research. There are times when oil actually performs very well too, but it certainly seems like we're at the beginning of a longer bull market. And it's important to put into perspective, not only this macro signal that gives us high conviction to own the metal, but also the longer term thesis where we put out a research a couple, maybe a month or so ago, looking back on global production of gold, because we really had two major bull markets in the gold space going back to the 70s, and looking at both sides, they had their own kind of individual drivers at that time. The 70s was driven by inflation. The early 2000s was really driven by China entering the WTO and moving the commodity markets, becoming a manufacturing plant of the global economy. Today, we have kind of a mix of a lot of things. During those two decades, however, the one driver that happened during those two times was that global production of gold entered a multi-year decline. In the 70s, it was more pronounced. We saw an 18% decline in global production of gold, and in early 2000s all the way to 2011 it was more like a 14% or so decline. I think we're entering something similar today. The major companies are starting to look for M&A and other opportunities in the space, but really one thing that we didn't see in the past that is happening currently is this institutional capital really attracted by critical metals, which is gold is not part of that as of now, at least. And it's actually forcing them to move away from production of gold. So we're seeing most of the major companies in the space actually facing a decline of their gold production. And that is quite interesting because perversely, I think this is going to be very positive for the overall industry over the long term. It's very similar to when the energy sector became sort of uninvestable when oil prices went negative. And instead, we've seen, you know, two incredible years for energy stocks over the last couple of years. And so I think it's a very similar in that sense. And we're seeing now, we first saw gold starting to move, then silver began to move as well. Even copper is now moving too, along with the metals. And the other part of it is that we started to see some of the mates and the miner companies moving along with the metals. Now we're starting to see some of the juniors. And to me, as an allocator, I love the fact that a lot of the juniors, the very smaller market cap companies in the space that we are invested, are yet to move to the same direction. If you look at the TSX volume, for instance, on a 50-day moving average of that, we're one of the lowest levels we've seen in history, although the GDX volume and the GDXJ volume are already increasing. Remember, the TSX Venture has a lot of the smaller names in the space. GDXJ is actually not a good gauge or benchmark for if you're invested in the more explorers and developers part of the industry. And so it's very attractive from that standpoint, because I feel very strongly it's going to be filtered into all parts of the industry. And as we know very well, those smaller names that have low liquidity are the ones that move the most when the institutional capital comes in. And so I think decisively, this is probably going to happen in the following months. And so I'm looking forward to continuing to improve our portfolio as much as we can prior to this move that I think will happen.
Well, Tavi, I'd like to dig into that concept a little bit more, because I think you brought up a perfect point here, and that the metals prices did move, and the GDX and the GDXJ, which are mostly the larger producers, the mid-tier producers, a few royalty companies, and maybe a few of the largest, most liquid development stage companies, but they're not really juniors. They moved, and people said, oh, the mining stocks are not tracking the metals, but they did. The GDX went up, and the GDXJ went up over 50%. Gold didn't go up 50%. It did tack on $300 from the low at 1618 and then blasting back up into the low 1900s here, but it didn't double in price. But a lot of these shares did double in price, and even some of the most liquid, larger cap developers, and even some of the most popular explorers, some of them went up 100%, 150%, 200%. So I would say that is outperformance over the metals. But most people are in these exploration stage companies, the smaller microcaps, and they haven't moved as much. And Crescat's model is really to be positioned in those exploration stories for the discovery cycle. So I'd love you to unpack why Crescat feels that, at this point in the cycle, when they haven't moved as much, is that magical timing window where you can get in before the real price appreciation.
Yeah, I mean, considering none of us have the crystal ball to really answer that question precisely, but it seems to me that it's just natural how we tend to see. There's some things that are not necessarily true in the precious metal space that we hear a lot, which is that usually you have the senior companies performing better than the juniors. Well, we like to see that initially, and then you have the juniors coming in. Naturally, that makes sense, right? Logically, what happens is institutional capital chases the easiest things, and then as they look for more asymmetry, they would go down to the smaller names too. But I think that more than any other time in history, what we're seeing is this true lack of folks that can discern those good and bad opportunities, and it's not allowing the real amount of capital to come into the space in a much easier fashion that we've seen in the past. And so, and on top of it, we're certainly seeing liquidity drying up in most of other capital allocators due to what's happening globally in terms of the macro environment of the sell-off of most assets. Imagine if you're holding a 60-40 portfolio with some gold and some miners exposure. It's been brutal for that particular investor. And then there are plenty of those out there. And so it's been very difficult. Now, I do think that it's just going to be natural to see this trickle down, this cascade effect that will come into this part of the industry as we continue to see capital flowing into the top of the precious metals side of the industry. And so it would surprise me if we don't see that. And it's important to remember, this critical metals part of focus for most of the major companies, it is likely to trigger an M&A cycle, but mostly not just on sole, gold projects, but perhaps gold and copper projects and gold and, or other metals in general, related to nickel and cobalt, even zinc and so forth. And all those things are probably going to be part of this new M&A cycle in a bigger way than even precious metals. That is not to say the precious metals are not incredibly valuable. It is my favorite part of this whole thing, because we know the central banks are buying gold in a big way. And it's important to track this big changes in terms of the quality of international reserves. which I think it's a real trend. When back in the 70s, we used to see central banks own close to 70% of their balance sheet assets was actually gold. And today it's less than 20%. So it's just hard to believe we're not going to see even a double from that metric in the next years. But what does that mean in terms of the influx of capital to the overall industry is going to be crazy. And so I think it is time to be taking advantage of this lag in most of the junior names. And so we've been focused on deploying capital there. We've acquired recently a large silver mine in South America. You know, silver has been one of our main focuses. It's been very difficult to find pure silver mines and pure silver assets, but that one is as close as it gets, really. And so it's, it's been a huge part of us to be trying to expose ourselves to those projects. And it's, but I think it's a good time to be allocating capital here, given the spread of valuations that we're seeing, especially from the seniors and developers relative to the explorers. But that's just my two cents on this.
That's a very interesting comment in how some of the critical minerals can actually go hand in hand with the precious metals in assets. We do see that all the time. And quite frankly, governments seem way more positive on the critical minerals right now. Now, Tavi, one thing that we should discuss that I think is another kind of fallacy within the precious metals sector, especially looking at the juniors, is that we hear a lot that we need the U.S. markets or the broad averages to crash, and that's going to push investors into gold and gold stocks. Well, it can push investors into gold. It doesn't usually push them into the stocks, especially the small ones. And this rebound that we have seen timed perfectly, really, with the bottom in the broad averages last year so far. How important do you think it is to see some stability in the broad averages, the U.S. markets, to continue to filter money into the juniors?
Well, what I like about the gold market, if you got some short-term drivers and long-term drivers working towards this thesis currently, the short-term and medium-term really is this yield curve inversion. I mean, really, if you look back and do empirical analysis in this data that I'm referring to, you will see that every time we go above the 70% handle of or threshold of yield curve inversions in the overall treasury curve, gold tends to outperform equity markets. That does not mean equity markets need to crash. I might have a view on this, and therefore I am short parts of the market. However, I do think the precious metal side of it looks even more appealing. Now, that's more the medium short-term thesis driving the metal prices right now. The second ones are probably even more important. One I already mentioned, which is, now a lot of the gold bugs like to mention this increase of gold purchases by central banks. And that's absolutely true. But you have to look at this with the lenses of what does it mean to their overall balance sheet? Why are they doing that in the first place? It's a neutral asset, number one, but also it has to do with this idea of trying to improve the quality or credibility of their own fiat currencies by owning better quality assets, which certainly is gold relative to owning debt from another indebted economy like U.S. Treasuries or even European bonds or JGBs. Important to also track what's happening with the BOJ, the Bank of Japan, which if you look at the balance sheet assets relative to GDP has been surging, which has been kind of a separate trend relative to other developed economies that have been somewhat allowing their assets to shrink by letting them mature. So that's a little bit different. Now, the two drivers that I wanted to really point out, it's the 60-40 portfolios, the shift from portfolios that have been so popular over the last 2 to 3 decades. It's just hard to believe we're going to see that. It's still popular, the popularity remaining for the next 10 years. It wouldn't surprise me if portfolios look completely different in the next 10 years by seeing gold taking a bigger role in terms of allocation and also commodities as a whole as well. But I think gold will replace most of the bonds, most of the global bonds and the fixed income assets when it comes to chasing a defensive asset. And so that on itself is going to drive over time a tremendous amount of capital to the space. The second thing that is happening alongside with the 60-40 portfolios is the 60 side of it, which is on the equity side of it, is that most people are focused too much on growth stocks for the last two decades or so. And that's about to change. We're seeing this transition from value to growth, which it was hard to call 2 years ago. And now it looks a lot more obvious because we had 2 years that we're seeing this transition already in place. I think this will continue. It will take a long time for investors to change their process of an approach towards selecting what to invest in. You know, this idea of doing research in the bottom line, understanding, really reading 10Ks and being part of conference calls, which is something we haven't seen the popularity as it used to be, and doing fundamental analysis, that is all coming back. And what does it mean to miners and for being part of this value indices that we see worldwide? And so I think that also will drive a tremendous amount of capital to the space, and this influx of that will be at some point attractive to the smaller names. And so that is, you know, imagine, you know, it's just like going back to the early 90s when technology space was getting formed. It was hard to find folks that understood well the space to discern the good and bad investments at that time. Those that were able to do that were the ones that killed it in the 90s, all the way to the peak of the technology bubble. I think we'll be somewhat similar today, given the fact that it is rare to find folks that understand geology to a higher degree. And so that, you know, creates a lot of inefficiencies naturally. And so until we see those become exploited, it will take some time.
Well, Tavi, we've made the point in the show even a couple of years ago that there would be that rotation out of bonds when the bubble was popping and rates were so low, and that it would flow into the precious metal. So agree 100% on that point. And as far as people shifting from growth to value, we saw that big time last year. But to Corey's point, do you think if the general equities were to start pulling back in a further bear market, that the gold and silver price and the critical metals prices of copper and nickel, if the commodities did well in the face of a general equity sell-off, could the mining stocks, including the junior mining stocks, still outperform general equities in that kind of environment because people are doing that fundamental research again, as you just covered?
I think absolutely. Go back to the 70s, for instance, when cost of capital was extreme and caused investors to actually be worried about profitability. And you go back to that stagflationary environment of the 73-74 period, when we did see one of the steepest recessions and one of the worst recessions we've seen in history, because it was just hard to hide. Real estate was falling. Most of the fixed income assets were falling. Equity markets were cut in more than half in terms of prices. Everything was re-rated a lot lower, but you saw still a large amount of capital coming into the commodity space, especially in precious metals, if you include gold and silver as part of the commodities industry. And so what you saw there was that the miners actually outperformed, not only, I would say, outperformed the equity markets, but actually diverge from overall equity markets by going up in value while the equity markets and other asset classes were all collapsing. Go back as well to the early 2000s when we had the tech bust. The tech bust was in the very beginning. Precious metal stocks got caught up along with equity markets. But then just a couple months after we got into this bear market, or that bear market, we saw precious metals diverging again from the overall market. And that was a very important period, which was what marked the beginning of a bull market for the overall space. And so I think it's going to be even as I said before, even a stronger trend this time around. I do think you don't have to have equity markets to collapse for gold prices to do well, but it is on the back of the macro imbalances that we have worldwide that gold will likely continue to perform as it has been over the last months. And, you know, when you think about what's happening in terms of the pillars of inflation, just because gold didn't work out during the period that we had inflation here recently, and gold sort of had a initial move, which was in line with kind of preceding this upward pressure from consumer prices, and then kind of slowed down in terms of the upward price direction while inflation was intensifying. It's important to know that the pillars of inflation remain very, very strong, meaning wages and salaries growth is still working. It's dynamic. It's going to be very secular on its trend. We've seen this kind of industrial revitalization where most of the G7 economies are going to have to kind of go back to rebuilding and reshaping their manufacturing plants. This is going to cause a similar move, but much bigger than we saw in the early 2000s with China. Imagine, you know, the G7, not just one economy, all the G7 economies having to rebuild their own manufacturing plants. What does that mean to the demand for commodities? We have the Green Revolution happening at the same time, this reckless amount of fiscal spending that often we don't talk about it because what we're spending in terms of annual amounts of fiscal spending currently is way larger than we saw back in the 70s, even inflation adjusted. And on top of it, we have another thing that I think is even more important, the deglobalization trends. And that is even probably one of the most important and critical points of this inflationary pillars. And one last one was just the chronic underinvestments that we've seen in commodities and natural resource industries. And so you put it all together, it's just hard to believe capital is not going to flow into this space. And knowing how illiquid and how thin those markets are, it's probably going to create, you know, some very great opportunities, in my opinion. If there was ever a time to take the risk as an institutional allocator and go deep into what I think it's the true inefficiencies in this part of the industry, which are the exploration and developers, I think that time is today.
All right, Tavi, let's get into some of the stocks then. Break down which companies you like right now, which ones you think are doing some solid work, because quite frankly, boy, oh boy, there was a flood of news that has come out to begin this year.
Yeah, I mean, I was asked this question a couple months ago, and I'll stick with three names that I think are doing great work. One of them, which is a company that's been around for a long time, but continues to show success and in terms of their drill results, and also BHP became a large shareholder. I'm talking about Brixton Metals, and we became a larger shareholder over the years. It's one of our top stories. We think we like the work Gary has been putting in, and also like the geologist, the technical team in general is very attractive to us. We've been deploying capital for the last, I would say, 1 to 2 years into the story over time. And growing confidence, and it's a great story of Garrett's been trying to capture this investment from BHP for many years, and finally that came in, which kind of solidifies and gives us higher conviction that they're probably onto not only one thing but maybe a few things in their massive land package. Barksdale was another one that I was looking at for a while. And they needed some permits to start really working on their projects. It's the extension of the Taylor deposit in Arizona, and it's an incredibly attractive story from that standpoint because it's almost, you know, nothing is a no-brainer. But in terms of geology, this one looks to be very close to that, and so it's really a question of the permit situation. And today we've certainly seen positive news in terms of the resolution of that issue, which I think will probably be hopefully resolved by the middle part of this year completely, and we'll be able to start really working on that, those projects. And so we're excited about that one as well. We own a large percentage of that company. Altamira in Brazil. I mean, I've been chasing Brazilian assets, especially given my views on commodities and our views in commodities. And, you know, Altamira is just an example of that. It's another company that looks to me, or looks to Quinton, a lot of similarities with Snowline's projects in terms of the type of deposit we're dealing with. Lots of great results already came out, and I think a lot of people are perhaps not interpreting them correctly, and that's just part of the market. And so we've been allocating most of our capital and focus onto that story as well. It is a large percentage of our portfolio today as well, and so, or a larger percentage. Pacific Ridge is another company we like. You know, it's a unique porphyry, golden copper porphyry in DC that we like to to have a large allocation as well. We own close to 20% of that company as well. It's another one that is likely onto a few discoveries, and it's, you know, it's trading for for very cheap market cap currently. It's hard to believe it's trading at those levels. And so those are just a few stories. And obviously, we still have large exposure to other names that we like a lot, like Eloro Resources in Bolivia, SK Mining as well in the Golden Triangle. Snowline Gold is one of our favorite names, which continues to be a large percentage of our portfolio. And there are a few others that we... Goliath is an important position for us as well. Goliath Resources, which is also in Canada. And so those are just some of the names I'd like to feature here that I think are going to be interesting. Western Alaska in Alaska as well, obviously, is an important story for Kreska. The CRD system, you know, it's very difficult to find high-grade silver discoveries today. And here we have one already. So it's one that we like to maintain our focus on those. So that's sort of, there are more stories. Obviously, we run a very diversified portfolio with a lot of different investments. And while it may seem small in a sense because we have so many allocations, I do think that is an important aspect of what we do, just because it is that kind of VC approach towards this overall industry, looking for large winners that can succeed in a space where very few investors are focused on.
All right, Tavi. Hey, thanks for sharing all of those names with us. I know a lot of people probably that have followed along with Crescat know that you guys are invested in a wide range of stocks, and some of those I have heard from you before. But look, there are companies that are doing still a lot of work out there, and in no way have we seen a rush of capital into the sector. But again, the last 4 months have been pretty positive. So hopefully this better market environment continues throughout this year. Tavi, thanks for taking time with us on this weekend show. I'll be seeing you at the resource conferences in Vancouver. We're meeting up on Monday. I'm very much looking forward to that. Anybody else who is in town for the conferences, please email Shad or I, and we are happy to arrange a quick little meetup, walk around the conferences, or go for a beer. And everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.